Hi, I'm Caroline.
I'm Claire.
And I'm Ryan.
And this is the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
Podcast.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, we're back again for another week. Last week was our first one back after the summer break, and we kind of alluded to in the preparation for it that, oh, you know, over the next few weeks there's going to be a few, like, where I'm not around, or Claire's not around, or Brian's not around, but we didn't quite anticipate it would happen this quickly, that we would have someone missing.
So, immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, during his exhaustive sort of rundown of, like, what to expect from Oracle Open World last week, he neglected to mention that he flies back on the day
there, yeah.
that we record this. So yeah, thanks for that, Brian. But anyway, as he's making his way across the Atlantic, we have got Ryan Priest in again, who was also the replacement for Brian the last time he wasn't
not
here.
Not a bad replacement.
No, yeah. No, not
you at keep
all.
Asking me back, so I must
yeah.
be on time, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Can't be that bad.
We've got kind of a packed agenda of stuff to talk about today, including stories about data centres taking over the seas, 3D printing malarkeys.
Yeah.
And also facial recognition systems at airports. So, all quite varied. But before that, I want to talk about Claire's 30th birthday party, which happened this past weekend, because there was a technology angle to that in terms of... Well, you explain, Arla.
Yeah, so the technology angle is basically we needed to use technology to figure out what happened.
What at the party overall?
Where were we? How did we all survive? One of the main reasons that we were using technology to deduce this was because Ryan just went missing at a party.
I think I've always done that from, like...
From birth.
From when I was, like, when I started drinking from 18, I would just, when I've had enough, need to do all the goodbyes.
Yeah.
I just sort of wander off.
Yeah.
And I think it was that stage of the night where everyone was probably just out in the garden having your enjoyable silent disco, that I probably just wandered away.
I think there is that moment, though, when you're done, and you kind of look at the room and you think, oh, God, really? Do I want to go around to everyone and say, bye, nice to meet you, never met you before, but bye? You know, you just think, I'm out.
Yeah. I get that. I respect that. But I was worried about you, because the last time I had seen you that night, it was clear that you were rather...
Well, you had given me a pint of this mysterious cocktail.
The blue liquid.
Mm.
Yeah, Bantha milk.
Is that what it's called?
No, it's not. I just made that up. But no, because the blue milk in Star Wars is Bantha milk.
Ah, right.
So it's my interpretation, you see. So basically, to deduce whether or not Ryan was okay, I looked at my phone and
At the time.
Yes!
See, I had a theory in the end that I got a phone call. And so I just wandered out of your house to take it, and I was walking up and down around the road.
Right.
And then I think I got lost. I think that's what happened.
Disturbing.
I didn't bring my jumper or anything with me. So.
Right.
I tried calling you a few times, panicked.
That you couldn't find my house again.
I'm pretty sure I couldn't even work my way out to where the main road was. So eventually I had to re-download Uber, which I haven't used in a long time, and. Nice 25 quid journey home.
So let's look at some timestamps. The first missed call I have from you is at 3:06. This is in the AM.
Mm-hmm.
3:06 AM, 3:09 AM, 3:09 AM, 3:09 AM.
That seems like quite urgent calling.
Yeah.
Like,
3:13 AM, and then nothing until 4:03.
What happened there?
I don't know. That's what we want to use technology to deduce. So if you could get your phone out, look at your call log. See what's going on.
See what time you summoned
but
your Uber.
What different am I gonna? Yes. How do you find that out?
I don't know.
If you go on Uber,
Uber
you should be able to see, you should be able to see your past journeys.
Let's have a look. So 03:43, your Sunday morning trip with Uber.
Oh, okay.
Is that when it started or when it finished?
It's hard to say. Usually you get those when it finishes. Then. Oh yeah. So 3:19.
Okay.
I was picked up. This is interesting. So you can tell me where this is. I was picked up at 3:19 I'm not going to say the address, but it was,
Okay.
Was that near you? Or had I wandered really far?
It is. So that particular road is near me. That's also where I found your jumper.
There we go. So that's, I forgot I had a jumper.
You've
me.
Wandered through the maze. That is, you know, like all of the little roads
like residential.
Around my
so
area.
It was
yeah.
a maze. I reckon that's the problem then. I couldn't get to my main road to find a bus stop.
It's a closed loop. with lots of different roads that were also dead ends.
It was so quite dramatic. Because imagine being like that drunk and not being able, like, just needing to go home. I'm just out and about.
And you just can't find a road.
It was very strange. Yeah. And you didn't care enough to answer your phone.
I didn't.
But the spookiest part about this is it's too hard to understand or even get into. But basically, I've not been able to use Uber or Uber Eats for about a year.
Why?
Because one of my old housemates, she needed to order something on Uber Eats once, but her phone wasn't working on it. So she somehow did this thing that you can do where you can sort of piggyback your account.
Oh, really?
From like her account from my phone. And whatever she did there, no matter what I've done, I've even tried calling customer service in the past, it's just not been figured out. So I just haven't been able to use the apps.
Oh,
so deleted them, just haven't used them in a year. I download them when I'm blind drunk and try and fix it, and somehow I'm more in sync with technology, maybe when I'm relaxed, when I'm drunk, than when I'm actually trying to use it.
There was this guy, I can't remember his name now, but he had a service online that he would test your website drunk to see. Because apparently if it's intuitive enough that a drunk person can just start using your website and use it, you've got a great UI.
Mm.
Whereas if it's not and they're struggling, you've got so many issues you need to get. Like, no one will be able to use it. Yeah, absolutely. There was a caveat, I remember, on the website sort of saying, I will only drink this amount of alcohol while doing it. And please don't worry about me, I'm not an alcoholic. But yeah, it's probably
that's what I would say.
If I was an alcoholic, is everyone going to go, oh yeah, I'm an alcoholic?
Yeah, tell everyone.
But no, there might be something in that, yeah.
Wasn't that what sparked our idea of the YouTube drunk hotel review series that we were going
to
do?
Yeah, he was a hero of ours, but not enough to remember his name.
Yeah, we can't remember his name because we were drunk.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it is. I think it's just you're not as worried about it working, maybe, so it just flows better.
Yeah, or maybe you're a bit gung-ho, like, oh, like, you know, if you had to say to school, I won't try this, like, that would never work. And you're like, maybe. You're a bit more hopeful when you've had a drink.
I was just like, this will work.
Yeah.
And but it worked.
I was going to ask, what were you aiming for? Were you aiming for a tube, a bus, or just, were you going to
walk? I do live on the night tube.
Okay.
So you could have got a tube.
Yeah, I think that's what I was doing.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I just wanted to find that main road, and then
I
was trapped.
Yeah.
I was trapped a maze. I just don't understand why I left my jumper there if I had it with me. Did I just sort of go, this mission required me to have no distractions? Just threw my £100 jumper on the ground and left it there.
It was in a bag. It was in a bag. It had some baby wipes in it as well. Baby wipes, so I'm not sure.
I picked up baby wipes, incidentally, on the way to your party.
Oh,
because I had to walk about an hour to get to Colette's from the station.
About 45 minutes. It's not an hour.
Let me exaggerate, so it's not as embarrassing that I sweat that much. So I had to make
it was like a clean-up mission.
Yeah. I bought deodorant, baby wipes. It's not the first time I've ever done this either.
No, there weren't deodorant in the bag.
Oh, well, the deodorant's gone. Someone's had that, but not my jumper.
Someone's that's looked the in the bag and gone, I don't need baby wipes, but I do need some deodorant. I'm going to leave a £100 jumper.
Well, it's good that that jumper just survived. What is that? 9 hours?
Yeah.
More than that?
Well, I picked it up probably about, it was more than 12 hours it was there.
That's
and it was just sitting there in the bag.
I mean, on a Sunday. I criticise things being dead on Sundays, but that wouldn't have survived a Saturday.
Mm-hmm. But it all worked out well in the end. Ryan was returned to us. You both, I saw Ryan Monday morning. You sort of bounced in looking fairly bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And
doesn't take me long to recover.
It's because you're pros, like both of you. Straight back to it. No, I meant like straight back to work.
Yeah, we want to make sure that we can use our apps
in
any circumstances.
But it was a very good party. It was nice to finally meet your family. They all laugh.
Oh,
and I enjoyed all of the old photos of you spread around.
Oh yeah, my friends printed out a load of photos of me as a child in varying states of undress. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, I just said I enjoyed seeing those photos, and now
now I've made it weird.
There is a technology angle there as well. If it'd been all those pictures are all analog, I'm assuming. Obviously, people could take pictures of them on their phones, but a lot of that will never see the light of day, like, because they're not online.
So. Yeah, that's true.
So they've got that to be thankful for if you don't want those going any further.
Yeah, exactly.
But aside from that, what else have you been up to this week? 3D printing malarkeys?
Yes. So the reason that you didn't see me on Monday, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, like Ryan here, is because I was out and about. So I've done lots of different things this week. Most recent was my trip to the Women of 3D Printing Mixer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that Katie and James from Hobbs 3D organises. She basically organises it to connect people, women in the space, predominantly, but you know, like lots of different people. She says that it's open to anyone who wants to attend and come and talk and network and just, you know, like get things going in the space. She wants people to connect and get stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people there who she's working on with different projects to do varying things from getting kids in schools interested in emerging technologies to she had people there who were from education that she's working with to do that. She had people there who were working on things like 3D scanning art and artifacts so that they can be sort of like digitized and then accessible online and stuff. And she was featuring a female artist that was using sort of like 3D printing and design in some way. So the woman who was featured in this particular session was Julia Makovic, who has made a game. I think it's called Ghost Boy.
Okay.
But like boy with an eye.
Ghost Boy. Oh, okay, like Skater Boy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she had sort of like a set there with, I guess it was like a pink castle. I couldn't tell what it was made out of. You would assume it was 3D printed, I'm not sure. But she had made this responsive, touch-sensitive silica controller in the shape of a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all like mushy, and you could play the game by like touching his little hands and that. It was quite cool. So that's right. That's what they had there. So that was just nice, you know, like getting to meet people, talking about what's going on, what projects everyone's doing. And Katie and James, who is the UK lead of Women in 3D Printing, she is the person who I mentioned had the 3D printed chairs in her office made out of reclaimed ocean plastic.
Oh.
So yeah.
How sturdy were they? Because I can imagine that.
I didn't film one. No.
Why didn't you? Like, you just worried that.
Well, it was sort of a display rather than.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But so gives you an excuse to go back. So I just want to try out these chairs.
Can I just film this chair?
They just sound very flimsy. Oh,
they didn't look flimsy. It was kind of like a nice little stall. Yeah, you obviously don't want to test it with your own, I don't know. I wouldn't want to be the one to break it.
I'd
have been like banging it.
I'd want to take shake it.
Like, something about it being 3D printed, like, I still think of it as just really kind of like.
I know what you mean.
Can they 3D print loads of stuff nowadays?
Yeah.
Machinery,
limbs. Oh, I know,
like prosthetic
limbs.
It's
just my imagination. Yeah. I'm picturing a Lexmark.
Like a nice little.
Oh, God.
No, they 3D print loads of stuff nowadays. Mm. You get like factories that 3D print parts for cars and et cetera, et cetera.
We're veering into. As a tech magazine, we're veering into. And it's clever what I can do these things.
I do have an element of that whenever I interview like a CIO or something they're telling you about this really cool project. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. Like, well, what a few people have done. Like,
yeah.
I still have youthful exuberance on my side, so I'm going to say wow if I find something wowing. But speaking of which, something that did wow me this week was what's been something I've been really interested in for a while is around data centres. On the sea. Like, you can sail away on a data centre.
Yeah, you can just sail away with someone else's data.
Well, yeah, you said that, didn't you? That gives a whole new meaning to digital piracy.
Yeah, digital piracy. Digital
That's
pirate.
So clever.
And
I'm just going to spend the rest of the podcast just admiring
this. How smart you are. And also, 19th of September was International Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Was that yesterday?
Yeah.
Because that's when I spoke to this company.
You should have used that.
So you're going to have like future Pirates of the Caribbean will be like starring Richard Ayoade or something.
But no, I spoke to this company called Nautilus who build data centres on barges. They've got a couple in production at the minute, but they've got one in that they're going to house at Limerick Docks in due course. I'm not sure exactly when it's going to go live because it's basically like they were caught up in quite a lot of like a bit of a planning dispute about around it, because it's an island, there's always a planning dispute in Ireland around any data centre by the sound of things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there was this kind of concern that if you put it in the docks at Limerick, you know, with Brexit coming and all this kind of stuff, they're going to need as much capacity within the ports as possible for like deliveries and things like that. So it's kind of like, do we really want like a data centre like occupying like one of these things? But that's all been smoothed over now. That's all been, you know, planning's been approved, so they're getting on full steam with it. But it is just really interesting. Like, you know, I cover so many data centres that are just like grey boxes that pop up in like Slough or wherever, and then it's like something I always want on a boat. Like, oh my god, yes, yeah, there
it
is.
Makes it fun.
Anything's different.
Yeah,
to the normal.
Definitely, because there's like a few that like are a bit like Bond villain esque sort of lairs. Like the one I wrote about one a few years ago that was at the bottom of a mountain, and it was just, oh, it's got its own sort of like motorway like road system into it and stuff. And I was like, I want to go there, and they're like,
no,
you'll never go there.
You're like, how can I be sure it exists?
Yeah, and just stuff like that. So anything like this really kind of captures the imagination a bit. So the selling point for it is that by having it on a barge, basically it, all the servers and equipment in there can be cooled by the sort of seawater systems that use the natural sort of cool atmosphere of the sea, rather than having to invest in like huge air conditioning units that take up a lot of energy and basically make, you know, what sort of why the data center industry is renowned for being so energy intensive. Yeah, so we were talking about how their one's going to work and why, and like sort of the selling points for it, and it is, it's something we've written about quite a lot on Computer Weekly, is that a lot of the data center hubs, the big ones like London, Amsterdam, Paris and Frankfurt, they're growing at a phenomenal rate at the minute, mm-hmm. but these are just land masses, and space is becoming of a premium, you know, the actual cost of acquiring land in these places is going up as a result. I think in Amsterdam at the minute, I think they put a ban on any new data centres being built in certain parts of the area because of space, but also energy. There's so much energy they're taking off the grid that it's, you know, there's a risk that you could have blackouts and stuff.
What was the main reason for the Athenry data centre, the Apple?
Why it didn't happen?
Yeah.
That was partly, there was lots of objections. No, not space so much, it was more the energy consideration.
Oh, okay.
That although they said, oh, it's going to be 100% renewably powered and stuff like that, there were concerns that, yeah, they'd still be drawing off quite a lot of power off the grid. And they sort of put in, going right back into the weeds of the planning documents, but they put in, said, oh, it's going to be this size initially, that's what we're going to build, but eventually it'll be this size. And there was, like, one of the objections was, oh, they should have put in a planning application and an energy assessment that took on, like, exactly, gave a real idea of exactly how much power it would be consuming.
So they could come back now on a boat.
Yeah, they could, sail in, like, yeah, hey, you guys.
You're still not welcome.
You know, we write a lot at the minute around Brexit about, like sort of financial services, for example, taking all their data centres and all of the data they have over here into Europe. Can you just imagine, like, sort of, oh, I'm going to charter a few like these data centre barges and we'll go, we're off to Europe,
we'll
now.
Take our data
like
with
armada of, like, boats, just, bye, everybody, we're at it.
One of the most nerdy things about me, so, as you can tell, I'm a pretty cool guy.
Yeah.
But this is a little secret I'll let you in on. I have got, I can't remember what it's called, but it's basically a boat tracker app.
Oh.
And it cost me £5. I think it's the only time I've ever paid for an app.
I'm sorry.
What kind of boats? Like ferry? Like
every
that
kind of boat. It's called Ship Finder.
Why?
There's a free version, but
why
come
would
on,
you mess around?
Yeah. So right now in London, let's try and get the closest.
I love this.
The closest boat to us is on the Thames.
Okay.
And there's one called the Eliminator.
Oh
my! Click on it.
What does it do?
Oh, it's not an image of that one. It's really letting me down here.
Is it just an image of the boat, or do you get an image of its location?
You get where it's from, usually.
Oh, wow.
What it's doing, like where it's, if it's transporting goods and stuff.
So, how
so I'm just thinking these data centre ones are going to be added to that, and I'll be like, oh, right, I think you've got a data centre here. Good to know.
Well, that's
just nice to be across everything, I think.
Yeah, but then also, couldn't that mean that they could track them for an attack?
Yeah, because they like to be off the grid and you don't know where any of them are.
Off the grid.
But then if you're there, like in like taking up a huge bit in like a port somewhere, it's like, guys, you're right there.
Yeah.
Because I was saying, like, one of the questions I wanted to ask on the call, but then I was worried with it just suddenly go, boop. Oh, they've
hung up.
It's like, what happens if like someone tries to sink your data centre? That's, you know, I've sunk your battleship type thing. And it's like, what happens then? Could that take out
all of someone.
I'm sure that
it's kind of, it seems easier, like, if it's just a building somewhere, you feel like there could be more protection and more security. Whereas if it's like just a boat,
yeah,
just set fire to a boat.
But no, there's lots of questions around. Like I say, it's from an energy efficiency and actual physical space perspective. Mm. Obviously the benefits of it all and everything. But yeah, you do wonder who is going to be brave enough to entrust their data with it. I think they said they're kind of going for a mix of people. The company I spoke to, so HPC workloads, a bit of academia. Research and stuff like that, but also possibly some of the hyperscale, like Amazon, Google type people as well. But then there's other companies doing similar things. There's a company I think called Keppel who were doing a similar thing in Singapore because there's absolutely zero land mass there for data centers. So yeah, you could see it taking off. But yeah, it's just
not taking off.
Oh no, wrong terminology completely.
Don't get my ideas.
Floating data centers
on a plane. Get Samuel L. Jackson on the phone. I have got a data center heist movie for him now.
That's not right.
Yeah.
But no, what was the name of that app again? I love the idea.
Shipfinder.
Okay.
Cool. Computer Weekly podcast is sponsored this week by Shipfinder. Find your ship today.
I love it. Okay. But that's been the excitement of my life this week. Talking about data centers on the seas and stuff like that, really. Kind of a bit sad that I had an interview on that, we've just talked about that and all that kind of stuff, and Brian's not here because he did air an idea of his a couple weeks ago on a podcast around he wants to write a children's story about autonomous boats
and how they would talk
like,
to each other.
Yeah, and like, yeah, they get into little shenanigans.
Tugs.
Oh my gosh.
Tugs.
No, I do not.
What it's like it? Thomas the Tank Engine, but boats, and that is basically Brian's idea.
Oh no. Oh no, Brian.
Someone's already done
it. Brian will have to tweak it to make them data centre boats.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh make my it gosh, more saved it.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Brian.
The tubs are just going to look so lame compared to that one.
To the data centre boat.
Yeah.
Maybe their personality is dependent on the kind of data that they're holding as well.
Yeah,
or if it's like social media data, or if it's, you know, like top secret data. Or
like if it's financial services, have like it'd be very serious and straight-laced because it's very regulated.
And then like you could have like a Brexit one. Just a big union flag.
It won't be able to float anywhere.
No one wants to be its friend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that does bring us round in a convoluted way to children's books, which is something we heard a little bit about this week on Channel 4 News, some interesting research surveying 100 reception teachers at schools.
Yeah. Which was a bit depressing. There was I think it was about 16 minutes, just a little download on all of the data, wasn't there? And apparently children can't read and they don't even know what books are.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
How old are these children?
Well, so receptions are like four and five years old.
I didn't know my ass from ale by that.
Did you know what a book was though?
At play school, I had to go in and the first thing you had to do when you started the day at play school was there was a list of names. And you had to pick up a peg and attach the peg to your name.
Right.
And it took me about 5 minutes.
Just sitting there.
Yeah. So I would have been in these stats, definitely.
In my first day of reception, I fell asleep during story time. I was really, really tired. I was exhausted. It's a very busy day.
It's a long day for a kid. My nephew's just started in reception. Yeah. It's like he does a half day and he comes in. You know, how is it? He's like, oh, don't talk to me. You're like, oh, okay. That's like me after 8 hours at work. But yeah.
Can I not just have a cup of tea and wind
down? I think they said on the programme it's something like, you know, children are getting ready to go to school but they're not actually ready to go to school for lots of different markers around kind of stuff we probably don't need to talk about, but like sort of potty training.
Yeah, communication.
Yeah, but that's, yeah, they're the bits that kind of stuck out because they have linked that partially to sort of the use of technology by children.
Yeah, and I mean like I did listen to it and they seemed to be blaming digital and technology for a lot of things. I was like, is it really technology's fault?
Mm.
I personally think that the parents have some role to play in this.
But then they did make the point on the thing as well that, you know, there is a kind of increased reliance by parents on technology. Mm. Sort of, you know, if okay, I'm going to go and cook dinner, here's something to watch on your iPad for a few hours and stuff like that. That's, you know, it's probably not a million miles away from kids over the years just playing video games.
Yeah, and being stuck in front of the telly.
What did people used to do though?
Yeah.
When everyone was a lot more well-rounded and nobody got called a snowflake, like, what do people do? have them in the kitchen?
No, I used to watch CBBC, CITV. But no, but they do make the point as well, like it's part of it is possibly linked to parents being more time poor these days. Mm. So they don't have as much time sort of sit down and, you know, read with the kids. So there's that bit in the research that one of the teachers sort of fed back that, oh, you know, we've heard about kids, instead of getting bedtime stories, the parents will set up an Alexa to read them the bedtime
stories.
That
is quite grim, that.
Yeah. That is just like...
Who does that?
I don't want to be one of those people that's like, oh God, isn't technology ruining children and stuff? Because I think it's great. I think it's amazing that they can just have an iPad and just work out, like, information for themselves. Yeah. Like, if they want to find out something, they just can. Probably not at that age, but...
Yeah.
The idea that... Don't even bother with a story at all.
Yeah, just
put them to bed.
When you put a child, when you read a child a bedtime story, usually they're halfway going to sleep anyway. So it's like a probably 8-9 minute job, and then
it's not...
you disappear. It's just thinking, oh, I don't have those 8-9 minutes to, or like maybe a bit longer. Say, oh, do you want to choose your book? What book do you want to read? Like, come on, let's do this.
Yeah,
have
a cuddle and just read them a book.
It's part of the bedtime routine.
Yeah.
So that was quite sad.
That's not nice.
But the part I really had no time for, which was the part that was clearly, to me, it was made to be like the most sort of shocking part of the whole thing. And there are a lot more shocking things than this in there for me, was that kids are going to school and there was an example of a kid trying to swipe a book like an iPad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't think that's a big deal at all.
I'm not even sure that's particularly widespread, but I think kids know what books are. So it might be an isolated case. Or...
So how many kids don't like have at least a few books around the house?
Yeah, exactly.
That's just a form of habit. Like, I come into this office sometimes and put my pin into the into the security to open the door as a key code. And I think it's just that. And it's almost as if a teacher saw poor kids swipe at a book and gone, oh my God, scum.
They've gone marching out there and started burning all the iPads. Like, no more.
It's like Kirsty Allsop smashed her kids' iPads up, didn't
really?
She?
Really, did she?
About a year or two ago. She smashed them against the table, like she said. There was a big backlash at the time. Cut her hand or something.
I mean, it is, and like, as someone who's got younger nieces and nephews, when I'm on my phone and one of them comes over, can I play a game on your phone? Can I play a game on your phone? Like, there are times where I'll be like, I will smash this phone if you don't leave me alone. But, yeah, it seems a bit extreme.
I've had that as well. My nieces and nephews sort of come up to me and go, what games do you have on your phone?
Yeah.
Like, as if I'm going to give them my phone.
Yeah.
And to borrow, like, I'm not your mum. Like, I'm not going to give you my phone.
Yeah.
It's like the most valuable thing I own.
Anything I own.
Yeah.
And then, they're asking me what games are, like, look at me, 9 years old.
But they think, but it's this idea, they just think the reason adults are on their phones or something, they're just playing games, they ain't really.
That's quite cool, that they just think that we're having a blast the whole time.
Well, I am, I'm on Shipfinder. That's beside the point. In fact, instead of bedtime stories, my parents used to play me the shipping book.
And you were alright, look at you.
Just ship mad.
Oh, God.
But what I will say, guys, is that it's okay. It's not all doom and gloom.
No.
Because earlier this week, I was over at the British Museum, where the British Museum is working with Samsung to set up a digital tech learning centre.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's called the British Museum Digital Discovery Centre.
Mm-hmm.
So Samsung has provided all of the tech that goes into sort of like this room. It's kind of like an exhibit, but it's free to enter.
Okay.
And they just have like loads of cool different stuff in there. It was originally launched in 2009, but they've sort of like closed it for a little while to rework the technology. But basically it's meant to be a place where you can learn to get more digitally savvy, so like learn how to use different types of software that you might use later on in life, get families working together, interact with some of the stuff that they've got in the museum. So not only can you learn about it digitally in that room, but then it tells you like where you can go and find it in the actual museum, so you can go and see it in displays and stuff. And it's just meant to be a bit of fun. So they had loads of like different stuff. They had these things called emoji watches. So it's basically a watch with a digital display that you could go and flick through and pick an emoji, and then take a picture of the emoji next to an object. The like idea being that kids and parents start talking to each other like, oh, why did you think that vase was heart emoji? And it's also meant to sort of like break down language barriers if you don't necessarily, you know, like understand how to
for these kids that can't actually
communicate. Yeah, it's meant to be able to, you know, like interpret it in a more magical way. They also said that they're creating sort of like digital packs, I guess, and I would need to check the facts and figures, and I'll have that, you know, like written up. But they're creating sort of like virtual access to particular stuff in the museum so that people across the UK in schools can view it, because obviously it's a London-based museum, but they're trying to educate as many people as possible. So they want to be able to get schools elsewhere in the UK to access some of the content and stuff digitally as well, and do sort of like virtual tours and stuff. But probably one of the best things that they had a green screen that you could take photos in front of, and then you could pick something from the museum and edit yourself into a photo with it. So I've got the photo that I made, which again will be in the blog post that will be linked to in the podcast synopsis.
Can we guess first what you chose?
I already know, so
you can. Oh, okay.
But, yeah.
I want to show it to you for the first time.
Okay, now go on then.
So that you can have a magical reaction.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah. That is sensational.
So what is that? Is that a sphinx?
It's a sphinx.
And you're sort of leaning over.
I'm sphinxing on the back of it.
All right. It looks like you're sort of like coming out of the body of the back of the sphinx.
Yeah. Yeah.
Almost as if the Sphinx is like a donkey in a school play, and you're
and like the back of the donkey.
Oh god,
that's
we are as one. So yeah, I got my picture. Well. Yeah, thank you. I sort of edited half of my face out by accident, but that's cool.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
Well, there's lots of questions.
Okay.
Shoot. But is this like a kind of, because obviously a lot of stuff in museums is like behind ropes and you're not allowed to get too close to it. Is it so like, okay, you still can't touch these things, but you can pretend to sit on them? Is it like that?
Yeah. You can still get a photo sat on a sphinx.
Yeah.
Part
of
that's
it
really
is good. That, yeah.
Okay.
So it's quite fun.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
Mm.
But the British Museum and the Natural History Museum, Science Museum, they're all my favourite places in London. Mm. So I was having a ball. I got to go there before it opened.
Yeah. Like, was there any signs of like Night of the Museum type shenanigans going on?
Unfortunately not, because, you know, like I think it was early enough that the security guard had left and the people were starting to come in.
Mm.
But that digital stuff in museums is like a good example that sort of counters that Channel 4 documentary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, technology overall, I think, is something that the next generation of children are more comfortable with than any before. And their interface with technology is a lot smoother than probably even ours is. So when a kid goes into school and like does that swiping on the book, you can tell that's really wound me up. That's probably more of a review of the school.
Yeah.
That kid's saying like, what, this isn't an iPad, like come on, sort it out. Like, this is a bit backward for us now. Like, if you want us to learn, like you say you do, like I'm not going to learn to go to the potty until this is an iPad. That's what it's saying.
Actually, on that point, from kind of Code Club Insight, I'll bring another one to it. We do find, actually, we get a lot of the projects we give them are like it's on a browser, and it'd be like, okay, here's a step-by-step guide to what you're supposed to be doing, here's how you build this like game or whatever. But it's, if you give them a YouTube video that goes through the same thing, they pick it up so much quicker than having to read, like, you know. So it's sort of seeing in real time, oh, where do I find this? Okay, that's there. And like, do you understand why this is happening? And it sort of talks them. And they do, like I say, they get through the work a lot quicker when it's like visual rather than just, here's points 1 to 5. Like, if you screw any of this up, it won't work. You have to work out why that is yourself and all that sort of stuff. So they do seem to pick stuff up a lot easier.
Yeah, it's more about how you use it.
Potty training. On YouTube.
That's where it's going next.
Yeah.
You just put them in a room, you're like, sort it out, kid. Here's an iPad.
There is a meme like that, some guy, like, it's like a dad and his son and a puppy. And the dad's like, oh, if you want to train the puppy, you know, there's loads of videos on YouTube, and the kid puts the YouTube video in front of the puppy. Like, here you go. loads of puppy training things, but
there's going to be an expose next on, like, Britain's puppies are not sitting when told.
If you say like and subscribe, they like give you their paw and stuff. So yeah, that's what it would come up to. But yeah, so that was a bit on the, I guess, the growing creep of digitisation in our society. It's affecting children, it's affecting everybody. But also air passengers. That was the subject of your downtime this week, wasn't it?
It's a blurred thing for me, this facial recognition in airports, because I swear for a couple of years now, or even more, they have been using it in various ways, But I suppose the distinction here is Gatwick are using it for actual boarding.
Oh, okay, yeah, cause it's always been passport control.
Yeah. So I got that a little bit confused when I first read it, and even when I was writing about it at first, I kind of thought, well, it has kind of been around for a while, but this is just like the boarding stage.
As in, they don't have to check your passport because they already know it's you. How does it work?
So this, the boarding is just basically another version of that passport control that you mentioned. Okay. It's just basically another stage where you approach those sort of like Perspex doors that open when they're ready for you.
Oh, yeah.
You sort of put your passport in, or maybe your boarding pass in this case, and it scans your face, and then you move through.
Mm.
But there's been a lot of criticism for it, saying that like the technology is still kind of new, and part of it is to like detect people that are sort of on a system of like terrorist suspects and things like that.
Mm.
And up until only recently, some of this facial recognition technology hasn't been able to like identify chihuahuas from muffins.
Yeah, true.
So there's a lot of criticism around it and like ethics and stuff. Mm. But as you can imagine, I didn't really bother with any of that. I just talked about when I first used these facial recognition technology at airports.
Yeah.
I knew when I was in the queue, watching everyone else use it before me, people that were clearly not as smart as me, guys, I just knew they were all doing it fine. When it got to me, there was going to be a problem. But I think that's the problem itself. It all looked too simple, too smooth. I knew I'd find a way to mess it up. And I did. So it's still something that I need to master, but I suppose it's just like another example.
Maybe you should have been drunk.
I was gonna say it feels like
I would have flown through.
I feel like this, you might be carving out a bit of a niche for yourself here around like you just kind of kicking the tires and all these types of technology. Like, does this work? If it doesn't pass the Ryan Priest test, that's the drawing board, guys. Like, there's obviously a flaw in this passport system or like facial recognition system. If I can't make it work,
It's not worthy.
Or I just think it's an attention thing. I think from a young age, I've just been too personal attention. I remember at sports days, people used to, all the kids had to like carry their chairs out so they had somewhere to sit at sports day. I had the teacher's assistant carrying the chair for me. And I think it's the same with this. I want to be rejected subconsciously by this machine, because I want to be like the special kid that goes and sees the sort of security control person.
Yeah.
Goes, oh, sorry. But that I didn't get any special attention. Like when that did happen to me, they just looked at me like I was an imbecile.
Like, you can't make this work.
You can't even, you have to find a different way of getting attention.
It's interesting because like there was an airline last year. We did I think it might have been Singapore Air, I might be making that up. But like the guy was talking about how in the future, like your whole journey through an airport, you won't need to, there won't be any kind of paper you'll need to show. Your face will be your passport, it will be your boarding pass, and all that kind of stuff. So I guess we'll come into that. But yeah, like you say, a lot of these systems, so like we travel a lot for work and stuff like that, and a lot of the different countries you go to, they have different variations of these systems.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And I always feel a bit like the ones that are the most problematic or a sign of a country that just doesn't want me there. Like after, like if I've been on a long haul flight and there's a massive queue and then the thing doesn't work, like, we obviously don't want me here, guys. Like,
yeah, you're like, sort it out.
And it's, yeah, I don't know why that is. That's always my feeling, like, oh, well, if you don't.
Yeah, we sort of take technology personally.
Yeah.
Everybody's so, like, volatile in those situations. You've been awake for a very long time. You're sweaty. And if something goes wrong, it just feels like another thing that you don't want to cope with.
Yeah, it's just so stressful environments anyway.
I just want to be told what to do all the time. Yeah. So if they can develop technology that's really good at that. But to be fair, those things, like, they are idiot-proof. But just not for me.
But, yeah, we've got a lot more travelling and things to be doing over the next few weeks, don't we? So,
yeah, we do.
Yeah, so Brian will be back next week. Hopefully both of us will be, as long as no trips come up or anything.
Yeah,
you never know, though. But yeah, I think that's probably a good time to wrap things up.
Yeah.
So, thank you very much, Ryan, for standing in at such short notice.
Thanks for calling me in any time.
And good luck with your ships.
Cheers, I'm going to get back to them now.
Thanks, Claire.
Anytime.
All of our time. Bye.
Bye.